Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and today's episode is a weekly docket episode where I tell you the top headlines in true crime for the week. I'm getting this one out a little bit early because it is Thanksgiving, so happy Thanksgiving, and if you're listening while you travel to some family dinners, maybe you can bring up one of these stories at your Thanksgiving table to just really lighten the mood, right? Okay, let's go ahead and talk about our first story. This week, one story that grabbed a lot of attention was the situation with Morgan Geyser, one of the two girls that were involved in the 2014 Slenderman stabbing. It's a case that most of us probably remember because it was so weird and bizarre, but in case you don't know what we're talking about, to give a little background, in 2014, Morgan was 12 years old, and she and her friend, Anissa Wire, lured their classmate Peyton Lutner into the woods in Waukesha, Wisconsin during a sleepover. The girls had become obsessed with this online horror character called Slender Man, and they convinced themselves that they needed to kill someone to prove their loyalty so that he wouldn't hurt their families. So Morgan stabbed Peyton 19 times, and somehow Peyton survived after crawling out of the woods and being found by a passerby. I think it was a guy on a bike. But it's one of those cases that just stuck with people because of the age of the girls, the extreme violence of it all, and the idea that this internet creepypasta could twist a kid's mind that far. And if you're not familiar with creepypasta, I actually had to look it up because I've seen that word thrown around, and I think it's kind of like a new age term, but it's essentially like a urban myth, but like an internet urban myth, if that makes sense. So anyway, fast forward to today, Morgan is now 22 years old, and she's been held at the Winnebago Mental Health Institute ever since she was found not guilty by reason of mental disease. She's been in a psychiatric care facility for more than a decade. And earlier this week, staff realized she went missing. Her ankle GPS monitor had been cut and she had walked away from the facility. This, of course, triggered a full alert because even though she's not technically in a prison, she is in a court-ordered commitment with security measures in place. So they put out a statewide notice and began tracking her last known movements. What surprised people is where she ended up. She was found in Illinois, about 150 miles away in the Chicago suburb of Posen. Local police spotted her. There's actually body cam footage, and I'll go ahead and share a clip of that right now so you can hear what the interaction was like.
I don't know why I have to do this.
Because I don't believe you're 23, that's why. Okay, we got called here for a call, so. To be honest, I want to make sure that you're not missing. As long as you're not missing, you can go on your way. Are you missing from somewhere? Just give me your name and date of birth and you can be on your way.
Okay, I'm 19.
Huh?
I'm 19.
19?
Yeah.
It's fine, you're still an adult. So.
Yeah, so what's your last name? No, what?
I don't want to give you my name.
Okay, well, then we're going to arrest you. We're going to take you an ID. We're going to hold you an ID
at
the station. So, you don't want to obstruct an officer. Give me your name and date of birth. You're not wanted for murder, right?
Right.
Okay, then there shouldn't be any problem.
Okay, you're making it bigger.
What's your last name?
Reese.
How do you spell it?
I-E-S.
I-E-S?
Mm-hmm. No, G-R-I-E-S.
Okay. G-R-I-E-S. What's your first name?
Stephanie.
How do you spell it?
E-P-H-I-N-E.
E-P-H-I-A-N-I-E,
sorry.
Now you did something wrong because you're coming back no record on files, and that means you're lying to us about your name. Okay? So, now that's obstructing. I'm going to give you one more chance before we're going to take you in custody and fingerprint you, okay? So, just be honest. It's not a big deal. You're making it a bigger deal.
Okay, let's try this again.
I don't know what you're
What's your last name?
Please just let me go.
Please,
I didn't break.
Can we please let her go?
So
I didn't break.
You did by lying.
And you guys are loitering.
Our statute of obstruction identification at this moment, which is a Class A misdemeanor, it's a arrestable offense. Therefore, you can be placed under arrest for that, both of you, because you lied and you lied. You can give me your real name.
And we got dispatched here because you guys are loitering in the back of the business. It's not like we approached you guys.
Posted, there's no loitering. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so it's not a big deal. What is your name?
She doesn't know my real name.
Okay. Well, give him your real name. Don't tell him.
Okay.
Okay, so it's Morgan.
M-O-R-G-A-N.
And then your last name?
G-E-Y-S-E-R. I promise she did not know.
G-E-Y-S?
E-R.
And then what's your date of birth?
May 16th, 2002.
G-E-Y-S-E-R?
No, 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 no.
Let me say goodbye, please.
Okay, we will.
I will never see her again.
Yeah, you will.
No, I will.
3014, can you take her name and date of birth?
I did something bad. Let me say goodbye.
We will let you say goodbye. But just stand by until we figure out what happened.
So to add a little context to what you've just heard, she was found sleeping along the side of a building with a partner. And this partner appears to be a trans woman, born a man, transitioning to a female. So that is who she is talking about when she says, please let me say goodbye to her. She did not know. She's saying that this person she was with did not know her real name. So this person that she was with was also arrested. They go by the name Charlie, and they did an interview saying that they met in church and that they had been planning to run away together, but that I guess they never knew the truth behind Morgan's real name or like history or why she was in a psychiatric care facility, none of that. So now the big questions surround how she managed to leave, why she left, and what this means for her legal status. Her attorney has already put out a statement saying that she is mentally unstable, that she wasn't trying to hurt anyone, and that this was a symptom of her long-term struggles with schizophrenia. But prosecutors are looking at whether she'll face new charges for escaping the facility, and the mental health board is reviewing whether she should be moved to a more secure unit. So that's all we know for now. I know that there are some upcoming trial dates surrounding this, so I guess we'll learn more as the days come. Now, next, I want to give you an update on a story I talked about last week, which was that of Anna Kepner, the 16-year-old whose death aboard the Carnival Horizon has officially been ruled a homicide. And this whole situation is just unsettling from every angle. It's been a lot to keep up with, and I tried to break it down as best I could in last week's weekly docket. So if you want a little bit more coverage on the family dynamic and you want to understand their family tree, you can go check that out, or you can also always check out my social media. I post Reels, where I think it's just sometimes easier to understand if you're more of a visual learner. But to sum it up, Anna was on a family cruise earlier this month. It was a regular vacation, nothing unusual. She was traveling with her dad, her stepmom, step-siblings, and then some other relatives, including her grandparents. As we know, Anna went to dinner that evening with her family and then said that she wasn't really feeling well. She just wanted to go back to her stateroom. And then the next morning, when she didn't show up for breakfast, her family started a search for her. And she was eventually found hiding under, hidden, under a bed covered in life jackets. Carnival staff apparently tried CPR. The ship's medical team stepped in. But by the time that she had reached the medical center on board, she was already gone. Now, because this happened in international waters, Carnival turned everything over to the FBI, which is how these cases are handled when a death on a cruise line appears to be suspicious. For days, no one knew the actual cause of her death. I think we all assumed that the manner was homicide, but the cause was unclear, and the family wasn't speaking publicly. Carnival issued their standard, like, we're cooperating, we're supporting the family statement, and that was pretty much it. But this week, everything has shifted. Anna's death certificate was released, and it lists her cause of death as mechanical asphyxia, which basically means that she was intentionally deprived of oxygen by some kind of physical force. And the classification was not vague or tentative. The manner of death is officially listed as homicide. That ruling alone confirms that there was obviously more going on inside that cabin than anyone initially let on. And here's where things get even more complicated. Court filings show that investigators are focusing on one of Anna's teenage siblings. His name is Timothy. He is apparently a minor, so they're not releasing the name because he is a minor, but I mean, everybody has figured this out, that it's Timothy. Now, apparently he's been identified as a person of interest, and the FBI has submitted multiple search and seizure requests tied to his electronics, digital communication, and specific items from inside that stateroom. Sources say investigators have collected DNA swabs, clothing, the shower curtain that was in the the room and some personal belongings from the cabin. They're also reviewing timestamps from the ship's room keys, surveillance footage from the hallways, and location data from the family's phones. Carnival ships have cameras everywhere except inside the staterooms themselves. And one of the grandparents, it was the grandmother, went on TV to give an interview about this situation, and she confirmed that this person of interest is the only one who is seen on surveillance cameras entering the room and exiting the room. And so even she says you can surmise that it was this kid who probably did it. Timothy's mom is Chantel, and Chantel is married to Anna's father, Chris. And so now she's in the middle of this custody dispute with her ex, which is the biological father of Timothy. And so anyway, a lot of this information has come out because of those custody disputes and that court process, which is totally separate. But that's the only way we've been able to get information that he is even a person of interest, because she was essentially asking the court to kind of pause what was going on with that because her minor child was potentially involved in a criminal investigation. So I know it's been confusing for a lot of people, and a lot of people hear this and they're like, yeah, I'm still confused. I know it's confusing, but that is as simple as I can make it. Now, next, we're going to move on to another story where this week in Los Angeles, police have addressed the swirling rumors around the death of 14-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez, the girl whose body was found in the trunk of a Tesla back in September, and that Tesla belonged to the family of a 19-year-old musician called David, which was like D number 4VD. I believe I've covered this story in a past weekly docket, but just as a reminder, the case first made headlines because it was so shocking. On September 8th, police were called to a South LA neighborhood for reports of a vehicle connected to a missing teen. When they opened the trunk of the Tesla, they found Celeste's body wrapped in a blanket. And what has followed, has been a wave of online speculation and some pretty wild misinformation. Over the past couple of months, TikTok, Reddit threads, and random true crime influencers have claimed everything from Celeste being frozen to being decapitated to being mutilated, and apparently none of that was ever confirmed. But the rumors spread so fast that the LAPD decided to step in this week to just set the record straight. According to LAPD officials, Celeste was not frozen. She was not dismembered, and her body showed none of the extreme injuries that went viral online. Investigators made it clear that they were baseless claims and that misinformation was creating unnecessary panic for the family and the community. So here is what is actually known. Celeste had been reported missing back in April. At some point during that time, she ended up inside the Tesla wrapped in a blanket, partially clothed. David told investigators that he had lent his car to friends and didn't know where it had been or who had access to it during that time. Police so far have not named him as a suspect. The LAPD is still working to figure out where Celeste was between the time that she disappeared and the time that her body was found. They're analyzing DNA, they're still waiting on toxicology, they're reviewing surveillance footage, and reconstructing the movements of everyone who had access to the vehicle in those final hours and days. Now, at this point, the case is still officially classified as a suspicious death. No arrests have been made. Police have said that the cause and manner of death remain under investigation, and they're urging the public to stop spreading false details that could potentially compromise the case. So this week's update is really just to serve two purposes. One is to correct the record, and then, of course, to remind people that behind all the headlines and speculation is ultimately a 14-year-old girl who lost her life under circumstances that still have not been explained. So if anything new breaks, I will cover it here, and we're going to go ahead and move on to the next story. Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com. Have you ever felt like no matter how much you rest, you're still just running on empty? Fatigue, brain fog, even brittle nails, those can all be signs of iron deficiency. And here's the thing, iron deficiency is way more common than people realize. It affects about 1 in 3 adults, especially women, and traditional iron supplements usually don't cut it. They're hard to absorb, and they often leave you dealing with nausea, constipation, or a metallic-y taste. That's why I recommend Citerol from PharmaNutra. Citerol is a premium iron supplement made with patented sucrosomial technology, which basically wraps the iron in a protective shield so your body can absorb it 3 to 4 times better than standard iron. And the best part is it's gentle on the stomach. There's no nausea, no constipation, and no metallic taste. Citerol has been clinically studied, over 150 published studies, in fact, and it's trusted by more than 2 million people worldwide. It's Italy's number one supplement brand and is finally available here in the U.S. Just one capsule a day with water anytime, with or without food, and you're good to go. So if you're nodding along because you're exhausted, foggy, or just tired of feeling tired, this could be exactly what you've been missing. Head to pharmanutra-us.com and use the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, for 10% off your first order of Citerol. That's pharmanutra-us.com with the code MAMA, M-A-M-A, for 10% off today. This week in Boston, prosecutors announced heartbreaking and deeply troubling new details in the death of a 5-week-old infant who died back in January, and now both of the parents have been charged with manslaughter. The baby, who was named Legend, was born prematurely and spent time in the NICU before being released home with his parents, 31-year-old Raynell Reed and 52-year-old Gerard Wynn. In late January, emergency responders were called to the couple's apartment after reports of an unresponsive infant. Paramedics found the baby without a pulse, and despite resuscitation attempts, he was pronounced dead shortly after arriving at the hospital. Now, at first, there weren't very many public details. The case was under review, and authorities waited for the medical examiner's findings before they would move forward. But now, those findings have been released. According to the medical examiner, the baby died from acute intoxication from fentanyl and cocaine, along with complications related to being born premature. Further investigation revealed drug residue throughout the home, and prosecutors say evidence points to both parents using narcotics regularly while caring for that infant. Now, Raynell and Gerard initially told investigators that they had no idea how Legend came into contact with drugs, suggesting that he may have inhaled something accidentally or picked up residue from their clothing. But prosecutors say that the environment inside the apartment was unsafe and that the couple failed to protect their child from dangerous exposure. With the toxicology results in hand, investigators are now moving forward with criminal charges. Both parents were arrested this week. They're now being held pending a dangerousness hearing, apparently, which will determine whether they stay in custody while the case moves through the courts. Authorities have called the circumstances entirely preventable and say that they hope the charges send a clear message about the responsibilities involved in caring for medically fragile infants, especially those born prematurely. As I read that, I just realize like how insane these types of stories are. And like, you could obviously, I think this is just common sense. You shouldn't have to tell people not to do narcotics around their premature baby that is only weeks old. So I don't know that really telling anybody that is really going to make much of a difference. So I don't know. I really hope that these people are charged to the fullest extent and are disciplined appropriately, I guess, but we'll have to see. Now, this next one is really gut-wrenching. I was tagged in this one multiple times, and at first, when I just kind of skimmed over it, I was like, I can't even read this. It's so upsetting and sad. But then I thought, like, this story deserves to be told. The mom, Raven, in this story deserves to have her story shared because I know she's going to need all the prayers and support that the world can offer. Now, on Wednesday evening, November 19th, at 6:24 p.m., the Tiffin Police Department received a frantic 911 call reporting screaming and multiple gunshots coming from a home on the 100 block of Huss Street. Now, Tiffin is about an hour and 45 minutes north of Columbus, and when officers and emergency responders arrived, what they found was nothing short of a nightmare. This situation unfolded during what was supposed to be a coordinated and peaceful effort for a woman to remove her belongings and leave an unstable and reportedly escalating domestic situation. She had been dealing with ongoing issues inside the home that she shared with her husband, 42-year-old Ryan Egan, and had made arrangements earlier that day to go get her stuff out safely while Ryan was believed to be working out of town. To help her move her belongings, she called 29-year-old Dustin Willie, who was the father of her oldest child, Ren. Ren is the older brother, and according to investigators, this was not a surprise visit. Dustin was purposely asked to assist, and the plan was for him to be there while Ryan was away to avoid any potential confrontation. For most of the evening, everything seemed fine. Raven and Dustin were inside the home gathering her remaining items while the two children, a 7-year-old boy named Ren and a 7-month-old boy named August, were outside near a vehicle in the driveway. For the rest of this story, I think I'm actually going to read the post that Raven's mother shared on Facebook. And then just so you're aware, I'm going to put the GoFundMe link in the show notes to this episode should you feel compelled to donate. So Raven's mother wrote the following, quote, "I watched my grandson take his first breath 7 years ago, and I watched him take his last breath last night while my daughter, Raven Broski, comforted him and told him that he could let go. His beautiful blue eyes and mile-long eyelashes peeking through his bloody face. While trying to leave a domestic violence situation, my daughter packing her and the kids' belongings with the assistance of Dustin Willie, Ryan Egan, Raven's husband, stepfather to Ren, and father to baby August, parked down the road, snuck in the house, and immediately shot and killed Dustin, then shot my 7-year-old grandson Ren 3 times, then shot my 7-month-old grandson August in the head while he was sitting in his car seat, killing him instantly. My daughter begged him to kill her too, but he killed himself instead. Dustin was an amazing father and person. Regardless of what him and Raven's ups and downs were, I always loved him like a son and truly valued and respected the father he was. He was extremely dedicated, which led him wanting to get his son and people he cared about to safety. He's been a part of our family for a really long time and will be terribly missed. My heart is broken for his family. Ren was very intelligent, fun, energetic, happy, funny, and extremely loved. He just turned 7 on November 14th. August was a butterball of love and cuddles with such a sweet smile. He just started saying, Mom. My daughter is the best mother I know. All she wanted was to be a stay-at-home mom and dote on her babies, which she was stellar at. She is beyond broken. Our family is devastated. I wanted to tell the story because there's a lot of egregious and cruel speculations. I also wanted to encourage anyone that is in a DV situation to listen to your gut. Leave now. Please keep my daughter, family, and Dustin's family in your prayers. Thank you to everyone that has reached out. End quote. I really have no words about this story beyond just catastrophic, I guess. I mean, I don't know how you survive as a mother after going through something like that. So, God, I can't even imagine. So I think we'll just go ahead and move on to the next story, which is a case out of Wichita, Kansas, where a former St. Louis news anchor, 47-year-old Angeline or Angie Mock, was arrested and charged with the murder of her 80-year-old mother, Carolyn Mock. So on the night of October 31st, Wichita police were called to Carolyn's home for a welfare check. Neighbors had reported concerns, saying that they hadn't seen or heard from Carolyn in a couple of days. When officers arrived, they found the front door unlocked, and once they stepped inside, they discovered Carolyn dead from multiple stab wounds, and she was laying in her bed. Angie was found in the home, and she was taken into custody at the scene. Investigators say the crime scene showed signs of a violent struggle, but so far they haven't released specifics about the weapon that was used, how many wounds were present, or how long Carolyn had been deceased before the officers arrived. However, early court documents point to a long history of family conflict, including repeated arguments, estrangement, and what officials described as ongoing mental health concerns involving Angie. Angie worked as a broadcast journalist in St. Louis years ago, but left the industry and has reportedly struggled with stability in the years since. On the cover art of this episode, I will put a picture of her back when she was a news anchor and a picture of, I believe it's her mugshot actually, side by side. And you can even just see the difference in these two pictures. They look like two completely different people. Now, at this time, police have not commented on a clear motive. They are reviewing surveillance footage from nearby homes, mapping phone and digital history, and following up on witness interviews from people who knew both of the women. What authorities have confirmed is that there were no signs of forced entry, meaning Angie either already had access to the home or was let inside, or she might have even been living there. And police aren't reporting any other suspects. They say there's no reason to believe that anyone else was involved. Angie has been charged with first-degree murder and is being held without bond while undergoing a psychiatric evaluation. Prosecutors say that more details will be released in the coming weeks as forensic results and digital evidence are finalized. But right now, the case is ongoing through the courts. So if this does go to trial, I guess I'll be interested to see what the motive was and how she pleads to these charges. The last story I have for you today is really a doozy. If you're going to bring any of these stories up at the Thanksgiving table, let it not be this one, okay? A Southern California man was convicted of murdering his estranged wife after telling police that he felt like a monster for killing her, burying her, then returning to her gravesite the next morning, digging up her body and doing the unthinkable. The gruesome murder happened on the night of November 10th when, according to the Ventura County Star, Zarbab Ali told police that he had killed his estranged wife, Rachel Castillo. He said that he waited outside of her apartment, snuck inside, hid, and then stabbed her multiple times in the chest when she came out of the bathroom. Ali, who was 28 years old, confessed to killing Castillo, the 25-year-old mother of his two children, during a police interrogation days after his wife's body was discovered buried in a remote area in Little Rock, California on November 13th. So Zarbab Ali was convicted of first-degree murder on Friday, November 21st. The father of two previously pleaded guilty to sexually assaulting Castillo's body after he had already buried her. In court, prosecutors reportedly showed video of Ali's police interrogation during which he confessed to digging up his wife's body the morning after burying her in order to sexually assault her. And then he buried her a second time in the same spot. He said, quote, "Just to confirm that I am a monster, I raped her," end quote. Oh my gosh. Okay. So the Ventura County District Attorney's Office said that Ali now faces a mandatory sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. I don't know why we keep these people alive. I just don't. And to add insult to injury, he had the audacity to go on the stand during his trial and basically tell people, or tell the jury anyway, that he had perhaps killed his estranged wife because of her alleged infidelity, which the family members of Rachel completely denounce and deny. They say she was a straight-A student in her master's program. She was not a drug addict and a sex fiend like he was trying to suggest. They said, quote, Rachel was a good mother and her kids will miss her, end quote. As of now, Zarbab, or however you say it, Ali, is scheduled to be sentenced on January 12th of 2026. So I guess we'll see what ends up happening. I mean, I would assume he at the very least gets life in prison without the possibility of parole. But this is why the death penalty exists. That's just my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a great weekend. Be careful. If you're traveling, please be careful. Enjoy this time with your family, and, you know, try to just really soak it all up, because that's what I'm going to be doing. I love you all, and stay curious, stay vigilant. Mama Mystery out.